This is The Think Tank, talking about the major economic, political, and social issues of the week on the Voice of Arizona, News Talk 92.3 KTAR. Here's Dr. Mike O'Neill and Mike Russell.
I can't be any more happier. My favorite time, I got to tell you, my favorite time is when I get to go one-on-one with you, Doc. No guests in here. It's just me and you. Mano a mano.
Mano a mano. All day.
Yeah, I'm excited about this. Well, I'm rip-roaring ready to go. I'm wound up, as my grandfather would say. I am wound up like an eight-day clock. It is ready to go when it is on. Let's talk about education, though. One of my favoritest topics, even though I'm not edumacated. In your world, I know you have an education background. I know you know a little bit about this. So where are you from in the education world?
Well, taught at four universities and then sought out honest work.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, and three kids. And I was the parent who was in every year sitting in the back of the classroom making teacher selections, which you can do, by the way, if you make a point of it.
Wait, hold on. Wait a second. You can make a teacher selection. What does that mean?
That means you get to know the principal.
Okay.
You get them to know you're interested. And if you got a kid in the first grade and they're going into second grade, you go in the spring and you sit in for a few minutes watching the second grade teachers and you let the principal know your choice.
Really?
Yes.
I did not know this. I'm taking notes. This is cool.
Three kids and never failed to do it. And got to, the only exceptions where I didn't do it was when I had a prior kid who had already had a teacher and I knew that
they were going to put that teacher. So that
wanted them. I didn't need to see it again.
Oh, okay. Oh,
by the way, it's amazing what you can see in relatively short period of time. You don't so much watch what the teacher's doing. You watch the kids.
Really?
Yeah. Because if you're in a classroom and the teacher's talking and nobody's paying any attention and they're bouncing off the walls, you got a problem.
Okay.
And so it's not so much paying attention to, you watch the teachers. It's not what they're doing. It's what's getting in.
Now, this is local, right? You're talking about Arizona.
Absolutely.
I can do this here.
I think this is true most anywhere.
This is cool.
You know, schools may not advertise this because administratively, you know, it's a nuisance. But what I did, I had one grade school, one principal, same guy from, you know, it was almost a 20-year spread between them.
From the day my oldest
was in kindergarten until the day my youngest graduated from sixth grade. And you get to know, and you're not obnoxious. You just, you know, I'd like to sit. And you go in the classroom, you sit for, 15, 20 minutes, and you watch, and you quietly leave. I mean, you have to be a good citizen about it.
But you're a teacher yourself, so you were teaching at universities and things like that. I want to know, and be honest, don't lie to me. How many times did you interrupt the teacher? I know you did. I know you said, it went somewhere else.
Oh, sure. But that's good. I mean, any teacher will tell you they love that. What they don't want is somebody whose head is somewhere else who's paying no attention.
Nicely done. Okay, I see there. Now, you just read a book. What's got you so fired up
this
about this thing?
I tell you, I've read a lot of books.
You're a doctor, so
well,
yeah,
I got a background myself, but I've read a lot of stuff on the subject, and I just read probably the most succinct and brilliant analysis of the American educational system I ever have. The book is entitled The Smartest Kids in the World. The author is Amanda Ripley. And I tell you, if I have to camp out on her doorstep, one of these days we're going to get her.
She's going to be right in here. We're going to make that happen.
We may make by phone. But I want to tell you. I want to take us through.
Okay. Tell me about it.
We're going to talk about parents. And then we'll talk about administrators. Then we'll talk about. And there's a lesson for all of that.
Sure.
And a lot of this is based on research that's been done that she pulled together for a lot of sorts. Parents, what should parents do? Let me throw a little factoid that might,
I'm ready to learn.
You ought to volunteer in your school and join the PTA.
Help them make copies and whatnot.
They have researched this, and parents who are involved in the PTA, and they bake cookies, and they go to football games, the kids of those parents do, on the average, slightly worse than the other kids.
No, they don't. Yeah. Really?
Yep. Not massively. It's probably not caused by that. It's self-selection. So that begets the question. By the way, and I talked to a principal about this. A good friend of mine was a principal for many years. And he says, the PTA is a social thing for parents. So if you're a parent and you join the PTA and you take enjoyment out of it, there's no harm done. Okay. You're not really hurting your kids' scores. I'm sure that's self-selection. What? So that begets the question, however, what does matter? And there is one thing that just knocks your socks off in terms of its impact. Read to your little kids every day.
Well, yeah.
Well, yeah, but that's, in other words, and think about it, it makes a lot more sense. Which is going to help your kids more, reading a book to them every night or baking cookies for the PTA?
Well, okay, I see what you're saying, yeah.
Number two, let them see you reading stuff all the time. There's a message there, folks. That's important.
Okay.
Quiz them about what's happening in school. If it's low level, maybe multiplication tables. Another point. And this, by the way, the point of this is you don't have to be highly educated to do this at all. Ask them about the substance of what they're studying at school. Hey, Johnny, that book you're reading in your history class, tell me what you're studying. What's going on? What are you learning? You don't have to know anything to ask questions like that yourself. You know, for parents who might feel, well, I'm not very educated. I want me. So what are you doing when you do that? You're communicating to your kids that what, son, what you're doing in school, that's important.
Okay.
And that message is the number one thing that parents can do. They can send their kids into school understanding that what happens in there is important.
Okay. So what you're saying is involvement, there's two different types of involvement. Mm-hmm. And I would say my wife's kind of, she's a little bit of both. She works from home, so she has the time that she can make a lot of the stuff happen. She volunteers at school. But then there's the active reading, there's the quizzing, there's all that stuff.
The second part is what's really important.
So
volunteering underscores that it's important, that's fine too. But the real thing is, what collectively, what's the message you're giving your kids about how important this is?
Well, I think that would be I think that's the sad part about it, is that there are parents with time to do these types of things, baking the cookies for the bake sales and helping with the PTA and things like that. They mistake that for their kids' involvement instead of actual kid involvement.
Last point about messaging, and our kids are not stacking up real well in lots of areas. You know what we're number one in the world at? And this is the messaging. Our kids are number one in the world in their assessment of their own abilities.
We're number one. Woo! Yeah. They seem pretty excited about
taking the self-esteem movement to excessive levels.
Well, yes. Did you hear it was last year. They had a commencement address by one of the faculty in I think it was Massachusetts, and he was telling the kids exactly how they should have what type of an image they should have of themselves. I have audio of that. I'm going to play that for you right after the break. It's Mike O'Neill, Mike Russell, right here in the Think Tank, News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
You're listening to the Think Tank on the Voice of Arizona, News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
We are talking the edumacation of our chidgens. Dr. Mike O'Neill and I going back and forth discussing Yep, our education system, America leading the charge. America, we are number one, by the way. We're number one. We're number one in our students'
assessment.
Feelings of self-worth They think they are Superman. They know they've got it all figured out. If you remember this 2 years ago, there was a high school commencement speech by an English teacher in Massachusetts that he said, you know what, you're not, he told the kids flat out. He said, you know what? You're not special. He said that in his commencement address, you're not special, and he broke it down by the numbers.
Across the country, no fewer than 3.2 million seniors are graduating about now from more than 37,000 high schools. That's 37,000 valedictorians. That's 37,000 class presidents. 340,000 swaggering jocks. So think about this. Even if you're one in a million on a planet of 6.8 billion, that means there are nearly 7,000 people just like you.
You are not special. How awesome is that? How does he nail that? He nails that perfectly.
Bottom line, we were talking about reading to your kids and things like that. You want to make them get it. Don't praise them for reading the book. Ask them about the content of what they're reading. That says it's important. And on the subject of praise, in order for praise to work, it should be specific, it should be authentic, and it should be rare. In other words, you got to earn it.
Well, I know. I see that. Authentic, though? No. Come on. You've raised three kids. I'm raising two. You can't have genuinely authentic praise, because when they bring you that picture of you with a fishing pole and you've got three arms and your head looks like something out of Alien, and you say, "This is so great," you are lying through your teeth and you know
it. I don't know that I take it down to that level, but we're talking about when we get into high school and middle school.
Okay, maybe high school.
A little more honesty.
Well, let's talk about that. I want to stay here in the United States. I want to talk about how we are doing as a country, you know, with our kids.
In terms of any of the measures of actual performance, it's not very good.
Mediocre at best.
And this is, by the way, where I'm going to take on the liberal side of the equation.
There's a shocker.
Oh, yeah. We are number two in the world in education spending.
Okay, good.
Beat out slightly only by Luxembourg.
Oh, Luxembourg.
We're number two from the bottom. No. From the top.
We spend the money. That's what I want
to
hear.
We do spend the money.
Yeah.
But then we look at where we go. One of the things that she did in this book, she talked to exchange students in a number of different places. And the one thing that came back universal: our schools, comparatively, the physical buildings were described by foreign exchange students that came here as relatively palatial. To put it another way, she said, a lot of these other countries pour money into teachers and get the best and the brightest in the classroom, and we buy iPads for kindergarten kids.
Ah, I see what you're saying. Okay,
number
so
two.
The spending is
number
in different
two.
Spots.
It's where we spend it. We spend a whole bucket more on administration. And at that point, everybody nods their heads and say, we shouldn't do that. But they have to hear the second part of the statement, okay, which is, why do we spend that money on education? Because we have tens of thousands of individual fiefdom districts. And every district.
Say what a fiefdom district is. Tell me what a fiefdom district is. It's a school district. I noticed.
Okay.
That, yeah.
And a school district has to have a superintendent, has to have an assortment of assistant superintendents, because you have to have curriculum, administration. You have to cover all these bases no matter how small you are. Okay. If you've got tens of thousands of duplicative districts, you are stuck, almost guaranteed, with escalating cost for administration. The systems that are far more successful are the way you cut administrative cost is to have fewer districts.
Okay. So, and you go back to the 70s. In the late 70s, I know that spending essentially flatlined, kind of mid to late 70s, spending per pupil in the United States basically flatlined. And I'm not saying zero. It just leveled out. It wasn't increasing. It wasn't decreasing. Mm-hmm. Leveled out. So did the scores in reading, writing, mm-hmm, and in math, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, in science. So all the scores are same. So we kind of think, okay, we've got this figured out. We've kind of found where the water leveled out here, okay? Then we took a serious spike in spending per pupil. And I think you're talking about probably a lot of that went to the administration and the like. What happened to the scores?
I'll tell you, you know what happened in
the. No, hold on. What happened to the scores, though, after that? I'm talking about from then to today.
Right. They didn't go up.
The scores didn't go up at all. Right. There's one went down slightly, but everything else stayed the same, proving that you can't just. We can't celebrate spending the second most in the world per pupil as a country when our test scores don't show that spending money helps our test scores.
In the pre-1970 era, the school systems benefited from something that was a social evil, but it was good for the schools, and that was race and gender discrimination.
Do tell.
Okay. Women, minorities, were locked out a lot of the higher end profession, and the one job that they could get was teaching. We got better people in the schools doing the teaching than the pay and the other stuff was entitled to get. Starting in around 1970, the world changed. Those other alternative professions, you know, medicine used to be 99% male. The medical schools are now half female. The law schools are a third to 40% female. All those represent very good social changes, mm-hmm, but they've sapped some of the best people out of the teaching
profession. Interesting.
Okay. We used to have a lot of those jobs.
That's very interesting.
And I'm not advocating we go back to that, but it is an unintended consequence of a good thing.
I kid. Yeah. I kid. That's good. But going back to it, I want to talk about the spending though. Let's talk about the spending per pupil.
In other words, it's you look at what we got. We've got relative what everybody from foreign countries that comes here and says the school buildings are palatial. We're investing in technology. We're stuck with it. By the way, and everybody says, yeah, we ought to cut administration, but we want to have really, really, really local schools. That means local administration. That means those are your. You can't have both of those things at once.
So what is it? One state-run board of education?
State-run, that would be a big thing.
You're pushing for federal. I know you, lefty. Yeah. I know what you're going to do.
I absolutely think that the mantra that the lower the level that decision is made is absolutely backwards.
Okay.
Yeah. But the higher the level, the better.
The higher the level, the better.
Because it cuts down on duplication of administration. You have access to higher level brain power. You ought to put the power, but you put the power in the individual school principal. That's the key person.
Oh, I wouldn't disagree with that. But if by that argument, though, because we have a department, a federal department of education,
that should fix itself. But they don't run education in this country.
Should we do away with the federal department of education?
No. No,
yeah,
no.
For what? Why no. not? What does it do?
But
what does it do?
What does it do?
Yes.
It provides aid and support. They're a support mechanism.
They're not
running.
So does the PTA.
Yeah.
The PTA provides support, and they don't leech the government of billions of dollars.
Side question, by the way.
Sure.
The other thing, and I've taken on the liberals, now I'll take on the conservative. Answer to everything is just sort of suck the life out of the public schools and let charter schools start. All the schools, countries that have fared very well on that, have done it with public schools.
All right. Well, we're going to talk. Let's get into that next. Let's talk about how U.S. differs from other countries when we come back on the Think Tank right here in News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
You're listening to the Think Tank on the Voice of Arizona. News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
Ought to be a fly on the wall during a commercial break. Let me tell you, Doc O'Neill's making promises over here. I don't know if he can keep. But he says it's time to get real when we're talking about the education system. And he said that, look, people might not be too happy. So let's dive right into it. U.S. schools differing from other countries.
Three countries. She did a case study of three countries.
Who's she now? Let's reset
this
on
This is
that.
Amanda Ripley. Book is Smartest Kids in the World. And
Got
I
it.
Promise we're going to get here if I have to camp out on her doorstep. But in the meantime.
I believe him, by the way.
The first country she looked at was Korea. And they have produced a system that produced number two in the world. Okay, and I'm not suggesting it as a model for the United States because it
North
is
North or South Korea.
It's absolutely.
So I want to make sure. Yes,
it is the pressure cooker. Okay, these kids go to school all day, and you know what they do when the school gets out at 4 or 5 in the afternoon?
Better be working.
They go to
Dang it!
They go to private academies where they drill and drill and drill. And you know what the number one problem these private academies have?
People snapping?
No, they got a law that says you have to close them down at 10 o'clock at night, and they need the police to come and raid because some of the schools try to cheat and stay open till midnight. These
Good
are kids
night.
Who've been in school since 8 a.m.
Right.
Okay.
Nice.
It is drill. It is rigorous. It is, they are producing number two performance in the world, but at an incredible social cost. And I'm not suggesting that as a model for you, but it's interesting.
I would hope not. Who's number one?
That is where the question gets it. Number one is a country that has a completely different philosophy from Korea. And that is Finland.
Finland.
Open,
that was my third
open
guess.
Approach. Okay. But what did, they had schools that were performing worse than ours.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Here's what they did. They recognized that they had a problem. The system was actually an awful lot like ours. They realized that teachers are the key. So the first thing they did, they looked at their schools of education, which were uniformly mediocre, as are ours.
Mm-hmm.
They closed 95% of the schools of education.
I like where we're going with this.
Okay.
Yeah.
Teacher colleges, they're now only select, when they reopened them, they opened them at the most elite institutions, and they get into one of these, you have to be in the top quarter of your class.
Like in this.
They are pulling from the very top, okay? If any teacher school that is pulling from anything other than the top students, third of students, are losing their accreditation and their funding.
Jeez.
Let me contrast to the U.S.
And this is Finland.
And this is where the educational establishment is not going to like this, but it's the truth.
Okay.
One is education schools in America are virtually open enrollment. As I've said, I've taught in four universities myself. I know of no institution in America of higher education where the easiest major is anything other than education.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, that's the so, and we're pulling by and large, on average, from the bottom third of the class.
Interesting. Okay.
Teachers are the key. Now, how did they do this? First of all, yes, they did increase the pay, but less than you might think. I said I went into this saying I think you'd have to double it. They raised it by 50%. But a lot of other things that are taken for granted here.
What are you talking about? Finland raised it by
50%. Finland raised it by 50%. Oh, by the way, and here's what the schools of education do. They're six-year programs. They get a four-year full undergraduate education, which focuses on substance. And then in contrast to the U.S., you know what they get in practicum teaching? They get a 10-week practicum with a teacher as part of their 4 years.
Okay.
And I talked to a principal about this. By the way, if they're absolutely awful, the principal are not allowed to fire them in that period.
Oh, we know.
Because it's a training period.
Right.
And I'm not talking about training, but the training. They can be awful. They can't even be fired from that for any reason. In Finland, it's 2 full years. So you're starting with the most elite students. It's comparable. It is as hard to get into an education school there as it is a law school or a medical school. Okay?
Okay.
They pay them 50% more. By the way, the class sizes are larger. The schools look like dumps compared to ours.
Well, can imagine. They closed down a bunch of their schools.
They're pouring the money. They're pouring the money. They closed down the education schools. They're pouring the money not into bricks and mortar. The kids don't get iPad. You go look and it's austere. There's no sports. School is an educational institution, quote unquote, from a foreign exchange student. Ask here what's the difference. Our schools are educational institutions. But they're not the Korean model of just drill, drill, drill.
Right.
What everybody involved gets the message that the schools are important. This teachers come in now when they start the very first year of teaching, they already have the equivalent of 2 full years of teaching under their belt, where they have worked in an apprenticeship model with other very good teacher. So their first-year teacher is like a third-year teacher here.
Okay.
Only
right.
They've gotten that 2 years under the tutelage of somebody who's really good. They pay more, they pay 50% more. That puts it at the point is you don't have to match medical salaries, for example, dollar for dollar. You just have to get up in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
They spend less total. Because it's not going to administration. It's not going on. It's going. Oh, and they give. Here's the other thing is we don't trust our teachers. We regulate them. We don't allow them to pick what books to use. Because we don't trust them, we test the heck out of them. They raise the question there. Well, what do you do when you get a bad teacher, in these systems? And they interviewed the people in the Finnish system and they looked at you like incredulously. They said, we select our people from the top. We train them at a very high level. It's simply not a problem. And by the way, all our teachers are unionized. This is not anti-union. But
I'm going to be a lot anti-union in a minute here. So
I think the point of this is that that's not relevant. If you have people in there, and I got to tell you, having run a business for 30 years and having hired lots and lots of people and work with them, what you want to do is hire the very, very, very best people you can and then get out of their way and let them do their job. When you have somebody who's mediocre or marginal, those folks you have to watch very, very closely. Their system are taking people off the top and then they give them the tools and they let them alone.
You had me for a while there until you said that the whole place is union across the board. My question is, if the program was working so well, if they said that firing someone is absolutely not even part of the equation, why unionize then? Why need a union? What's the purpose of having a union? Because I'll tell you a lot of the purpose of the teaching unions in the United States, and that's to keep garbage teachers around and not let the administrators fire them.
I mean, I can't speak to that, the point I raised about them being union is to respond to the question of what we have to do to improve education is get rid of unions. There, I'm saying they have a system like, it seems to me analogous to in my other professional life, one of the things that we did was employee surveys on behalf of, frankly, a lot of different entities, one of which was pilot unions. We worked with, among other things, the Southwest Pilot Union.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a far more cooperative relationship with their company management than a lot of places that were not unionized. So in other words, unions don't have to be hostile. They want to get decent you know, stuff for their people.
Sure.
But it's because
it's not exactly
some union,
a kind word in the United States, yeah, though. Well, when you talk about unions, it doesn't garnish up images of roses and in
well,
rainbows.
I'm saying I've seen hands-on. I mean, I started out doing a focus group with a group of Southwest pilots and asking them what you want in the next contract. You know what the very first thing they said was? We don't want to kill this beast. We own it.
Okay.
They didn't say more money. They didn't say, you know, in other words, they got it. They got, we're all in this together. We want to make sure that this company thrives.
Right. And because I think the Southwest is a model for top to bottom anyway.
And I think that, yes. I mean, the company started out and did a lot of stuff smart. Mm-hmm. So when they got a bunch of pilots and the pilots unionized, they had a very productive relationship. That's the point I'm making.
Going back to Finland here quickly, can the United States... Is it a dream? Is it a pie in the sky? Is it just for the United States to come anywhere close to that? It would take a revolution.
We would have to be, the point is, we would have to be willing to do some things differently. And when we get back, and I know
top
we're getting
to bottom.
This, I mean, this is like, they changed their, they said, we have a problem here. You know, they closed down 95% of their schools of education. They made it an elite profession that the very best and brightest wants to, and what goes with that? Is they get, and this is why I think money's not up, they get high respect in the community, mm-hmm. equivalent to, it's if it's as hard to get into as a medical school, you have the professional status in the community of a doctor.
Right, but then taking that into account, we would have to not only get rid of teaching establishments, we would have to get rid of a whole heck of a lot of teachers and administrators and start from the ground up.
There's a problem, but the point was that they did it. And when we're going to have to break in a minute when we do. There's another country I'm going to tell you about. We'll have to wait until the break before I tell you what that is. That did a turnaround and had a lot of the same successes that Finland did. They're on their way up, but did it in a 3-year period.
We're going to tell you about that country next.
You're listening to The Think Tank on The Voice of Arizona. News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
All right, we're talking U.S. education, how we stack up around the world. Doc, you said you were going to tick some people off. Yeah, I don't think you've done it yet, so let me sum up for you, all right? Class size doesn't matter.
If the teachers are superior.
Okay, fine. Yeah. If the teachers are good enough, class size doesn't matter. Spending doesn't matter if it's spent on the teachers, and not the administration. Mm-hmm. And stop complaining about all this nonsense. All of your arguments are invalid. We need to switch the system from top to bottom. There, I said it. You said you had one more country.
And their countries have done it. And this was a country that's not at the top now, but it was at the bottom, and it's well in the upper part of the upper half right now. That country is Poland. And the significance of that is Poland—
There's a lot of jokes about people from Poland.
I know,
Poland.
Okay. You're telling and we're not going to we're not going to tell them here. They have made major improvements in it. But as a preface to this, they have many of the same problems we have in inner city schools. They had huge poverty, immigration, language— Because of immigration, they don't all speak Polish. They got a lot of internal immigration.
Well, who does?
Okay, and so a lot of what they did, by the way, has demonstrated there's a lot of things, articles of faith by the sort of educational establishment that mm-hmm. shot. They did a turnaround in 3 years. They transformed a lot of their schools. That one of the things they gave to their teachers, they did a lot of the same thing with who's teaching, but they give the teachers accountability for results, but they give them autonomy on methods. In other words, we don't trust our teachers, and so we micromanage everything we do. We test from here to kingdom. We test all the time, but there's no consequence for students. What these other places do is they test rarely, but there are real consequences for the students.
Okay.
Those tests are important, and they know it. Okay.
All right.
We micromanage every activity. We don't let them select their own books. We test because we don't trust them. One of the things they did, they had this, we ought to track kids into these, you know, non-professional tracks if they're not did. They did this, had a natural experiment occurring, which is they delayed by a year tracking kids into these special non-academic programs. Mm-hmm. And they tracked what happened during that year, and their test scores went up.
Ah.
And then when they put them into the special programs for the not-so-bright kids, guess what? They plummeted.
Okay.
They learn something.
Right.
Expectations, values. Interviews with teachers there, talking about, well, what about the kids that are not doing so well? And, you know, they come from a bad background. Do you cut them slack or whatever? Answer, no. I want to think of my students as all the same. If I have too much empathy for the poor kids, I ease up on them. And there has been consistent research in education.
Oh, I agree.
When you tell the teachers, this was an experiment done, not in this book, but I'm familiar with this from social science. They divide up the class randomly and they tell the teacher, these are the smart kids. And they say, these are the kids that need extra help. They're not doing so well. And they measured at the end of the year how the teachers evaluated the two groups of students. Mm-hmm. And the ones that had been, the teachers had been told they're not testing real well. The teacher said, well, you know, they're still not doing very well. But here's the real kicker. They administered actual tests to the kids. Mm-hmm. And not only did the teacher continue to believe these kids aren't that bright, but those kids' scores went down. In other words,
They had expectations.
Lower expectations.
Right.
Okay, you know, Mike, you're not that smart, so we're not going to make you do we're not going to make you do the real calculus. We'll give you the bonehead course. And lo and behold, what happens is if you had been given the hard course and been held up to high expectations, you could have done. And this is the problem with what we call is kind of the diversity narrative, mm-hmm. which is it sets up excuses for failures, and that could be that can be just devastating. The other thing in terms of allocation of resources that is the opposite of what we do, are the fact is because our funding is tied to local funding mm-hmm. and property values, the richest areas get the best teachers, they
right.
get the most money put in, and it's not about total money, but they do get the best teach. You know, do you want to teach in the worst school in the Bronx?
Nope.
You don't. They get the worst teachers. They get the least amount of funding, and money is part of that. What these places do is they pour more resources and the best teachers into the schools with the biggest problems. And they start from the philosophy that everybody can learn rather than figuring out how to track them into less ambitious.
That's where you start to weed it out, and you truly find those teachers. By the way, there are teachers here, and I'll say it, I'll tick anyone off. I don't care. There are teachers here that are just there to collect a paycheck, period. There are. Mm-hmm. But there are teachers, and there are a good-sized handful of teachers right here in this state that want to teach, that want to do good, that want to raise our young children in the proper manner through the education system. That's how you weed those out.
And every principal knows who they are.
Right, but that's how you weed those out with the mm-hmm. Finland model, when they've got to go through 2 years of training, they've got to go through the highest of education, they've got to reach the highest of standards, and then guess where you're going to go? Top of your class, guess where you're going? You're going to Compton. That's right. Where you're going.
Because so they need the help, but you're going to be respected for it.
Those are the ones, those are the teachers, the ones that really want to teach. I think it's a brilliant
idea. And by the way,
in
Compton, you may have to have somewhat smaller class sizes because you got kids that are acting out and have all kinds of fundamental behavioral. I remember I asked—
But that might start to deteriorate over time.
Well, this came out of a conversation. My kid was in an advanced middle school class, and I went in and guest lectured a couple times to his class. By the way, it was a lot of fun. And it was before the 2008 election. And I had up all the maps, politics maps.
What you had going
they
on.
Were asking better questions than I got teaching in college.
Nice.
It was fun.
Very cool.
It was fun. But I asked him, I said, all right, tell me about this class size business. You know, could you handle, what would happen if you handled, could you handle more people? And this was an advanced class. Mm-hmm. And I thought his answer was very thoughtful. He said, in here, sure I could. These kids are engaged. When you tell them to do stuff, they do it, whatever.
Right.
If I had kids that were on ADD, hyped up with other behavioral problems, then I might need a smaller class. But so we do just the opposite. The advanced classes, those are real small to give personal attention. And then the lower end classes have higher, we do it backwards.
But at the same time, if you mix them up, and studies have shown this too, if you mix them up, a lot of the teacher's attention isn't spent on the good kids.
Yes.
A lot of teacher's attention has to go to the kids that need some help, they can't add to
it. You know, just think of it. If you got some kid in the class and he's bouncing off the wall, it's going to take more effort to do it. So you're not going to be able to handle quite as many of those. That makes a great deal of
look. We only have a couple minutes. How do we change it? Is it possible? Because I don't see it. I really don't. I know our Department of Education.
Tough. Culture. Number one, culture.
You need to.
The one thing that all of these places had in common is they decided at a systemic national level, learning is so important that we're going to put our highest achieving citizens in the classroom. We're going to make sure that the money that we do spend is spent on training them and retaining good talent. In other words, they don't have a problem of weeding out because the vast majority of people that they're getting in there in the first place are superior.
We're not disagreeing on the Finland model. It should happen. But you go into a presidential debate and you ask this question, how do we turn it into this? You're going to get laughed out of the joint.
Because half of what I said is going to tick off the education establishment. The other half is going to tick off the conservatives. When I say you can do larger class sizes, the educational establishment doesn't like it. When I say the schools can be Spartan, they don't like that. The conservatives won't like the fact that, charter schools have nothing to do with the problem. They don't fix anything. By the way, across the board on charter schools, some of them are good, some are lousy. And the other problem with charter schools is it sucks out the parents who are most committed and motivated, and those are the ones you want to be engaged in there. The educational establishment, it is possible if you do it right to spend less than we do now and get better outcomes. But the other thing is, then this is not part of our culture, use the schools to focus exclusively on education. We have sports and social and a myriad of other things. And if you think that's not part of a culture, envision two principles. One of them decides, well, we don't have the money, we're cutting advanced calculus. And the other one says, we're closing down the football team. Which one is going to be
Texas just put up a million-dollar football stadium. Yeah. I mean, they put up a multi-million-dollar football stadium.
We do have a domed high school stadium in Arizona.
Oh, do we really?
Yeah, I think it's in Springerville or something.
Really? Yeah. We have a Springerville? Yeah.
Somewhere up in the Northeast.
Check that out. Yeah, maybe they should teach geography.
But big picture, it's a cultural thing. Do we as a society, are we ready to give more than lip service?
No.
Are we willing to actually, it's a tough haul.
It's political.
It's not a one-liner. It's not, and let me give you both the liberal and the conservative one-liner. It's not just, give more money to the schools. And it's not just, invent charter schools and then walk away and think the problem is going to fix itself. Neither one's going to do anything.
And charter schools, let's be real.
What's underneath?
Charter schools aren't going to fix the problem. Charter schools aren't. And if we want to get to a different model, it starts at our political system and that's it, period.
And all these places that have had the high levels of success have done it with public schools, and they've done it with a philosophy that says we are here to educate everyone. We're not going to lop people off at the bottom and throw them into bonehead programs where we don't have expectations.
You and your bonehead programs. What's the book?
The book, The Smartest Kids in the World, Amanda Ripley. Call us, please.
Hey, MikeO'Neill.org and O'NeillResearch.com. Please stop by, won't you? Blogs, articles, op-eds, videos, and the like. Hey, thanks for spending some time with us. Really appreciate it. Dr. Mike O'Neill, Mike Russell, right here in the Think Tank. News Talk 92.3 KTAR.